From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, a state senator proposes what could give New York the toughest gun laws in the country. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the lukewarm reaction from city mayors to the idea of a super control board with power to take over financially strapped local governments. And a new report assesses the visitation policies of acute care hospitals across the state. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. In the wake of increased gun violence in New York and two mass shootings in the nation in the last few weeks, a state senator is proposing stricter gun laws that he says could give New York the toughest gun laws in the country. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Andrew Cuomo's father, Mario Cuomo, made history when he gave a riveting speech at the 1984 Democratic National Convention, just 2 years into his first term as governor.
A shining city is perhaps all the president sees from the portico of the White House and the veranda of his ranch, where everyone seems to be doing well. But there's another city. There's another part to the shining city. The part where some people can't pay their mortgages, and most young people can't afford one, where students can't afford the education they need, and middle-class parents watch the dreams they hold for their children evaporate.
Nearly 30 years later, his son Andrew, now also in his second year as governor, is not giving a primetime speech or any address at all, and will attend the convention for just the final day when President Obama accepts the party's nomination. Cuomo, who's considered to be one of the top two or three potential candidates for the Democratic nomination for president in 2016, says he's too busy right now governing in New York.
Because I am governor of the state of New York, and I have a lot to do as governor of the state of New York, and I want to do the best job I can as the governor of the state of New York, and I do that best being in New York.
Steve Greenberg, political analyst and spokesman for Siena College Polling, says nearly three decades later, things are different. And he says politically, Andrew Cuomo is making the smart choice.
The downside risk for him playing a major role at the convention far outweighs any upside potential.
Greenberg says when Mario Cuomo gave his speech in 1984, that address put him on the map as the national liberal voice in opposition to then-President Ronald Reagan's conservative policies. Greenberg says Andrew Cuomo, in part because of his famous father, is already on the map and has been for some time. Cuomo the Younger has already been federal housing secretary under President Bill Clinton and a nationally known state attorney general. Plus, he's one of the most popular governors in the nation.
He doesn't need to do anything to add to the already constant chatter about Andrew Cuomo 2016. So I think he's being very politically astute by not taking a major role at the convention. Just by not taking a major role, everybody's talking about why isn't he taking a major role?
Mr. President, you ought to know that this nation is more a tale of two cities than it is just a shining city on a hill.
Ultimately, though, Mario Cuomo did not seek the presidency. He openly deliberated about his options for months. Then, in December of 1991, with a plane waiting on a nearby tarmac to take him to New Hampshire to register for the first in the nation's primary, Cuomo said no. He blamed the Senate Republicans for holding up the state budget. In the process, Mario Cuomo had earned himself the nickname Hamlet on the Hudson. Greenberg says Andrew Cuomo is not likely to repeat that choice and has learned from the mistakes as well as the successes of his father's political career.
Andrew Cuomo, like all of us, is going to make mistakes. He's going to make bad decisions from time to time. But the one thing I don't think this Governor Cuomo will do is repeat bad decisions made by those before him.
And Andrew Cuomo seems to agree with that. In the only time in his term as governor that he has addressed the presidential speculation, he said it was flattering, but...
I've seen this movie before. Actually, in this room, there's like a whole little deja vu going on for me.
And he says, I know how it turns out. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us once again is our political observer, Dr. Alan Chartok. And Alan, this week, well, let's start a little bit further back. State Controller Thomas DiNapoli a couple weeks ago came out with a report. He said the cities across the state are suffering financially, and there could be a real problem if it continues. Then we hear this week that he and the governor have been talking about a statewide control board. Meanwhile, the mayors of Syracuse, Albany, Rochester, and Yonkers are all sort of lukewarm to the idea.
Lukewarm is another word for frigid. Let me start with just a little bit of philosophy. The whole idea is that the government that is closest to the people is probably best. Along comes Andrew Cuomo. One of his big things that he does in the beginning is to say, okay, we're going to put a cap on taxes. Now, that cap on taxes obviously has had consequences because we are now down to the nibs in many of these localities. They can't find the money to do the essential services that they need. We're talking about education. We're talking about police. We're talking about all the rest of it. So you can have it one way or another. You can be popular and say we're going to stop the taxes from going up, and there are good reasons for doing that because in some communities people are being taxed to death. And on the other hand, you can, you know, say we, the state, have no real business telling communities what to do. Now along comes the controller, a wonderful controller, by the way, named Tom DiNapoli, who has had his differences with the governor on some occasions. And he says, OK, if what we're going to be doing, if Big Brother is going to be saying you can't have the money to do this, we'll set up a fiscal control board and we'll basically run the communities and their fiscal operations. Now, if you were the mayor of Albany, if you were the mayor of Schenectady, if you were the mayor of Rochester, whatever, you in New York City, you wouldn't like this. We all remember the basic political science law, which is that the city is a creature of the state, meaning that the state legislature has the ultimate sovereignty and power and can tell everybody what to do. But again, to return to the original premise, is it democratic? Is it a good idea to be saying to people, we from the state level will bleed you to the point where and deprive you that you can't have the necessary revenue to do what you need to do. And now the chickens are coming home. And of course, you know, along comes DiNapoli. Now, whether or not Tom DiNapoli is really sort of just being clever with the governor and saying, OK, well, you did this. And if you did it, now the way we're going to have to do this is to have a fiscal control board. I don't think that that puts the governor in a good light.
Well, another issue that has a chance to put folks in a good light or a bad light is hydrofracking. Now, you've been very open about your views about this,
indeed,
and you've been predicting that the state will go for it. Now,
from day one.
Yes.
Day one, I said the fix is in. They're going to have hydrofracking.
Governor Cuomo comes out this week. He says he's in favor of a balanced approach. He's also said in the past he supports home rule for those communities that want it. Now we see an article in the Buffalo News, Alan, that calls into question these academic studies. The title, Hidden Sponsors of Fracking Studies, which simply means that a lot of these studies done in academia, major universities and such, are being supported financially by folks in the industry.
Well, I've always believed, David, that he who hires or she who hires the consultant basically is almost predictive of what the results are going to be. Now, if what you think I'm saying is that all academics are a bunch of prostitutes, that is, of course, nonsense. I never said it, and I never will. However, I can tell you that we are now putting immense pressure on our state universities and everybody else to come up with money. I mean, talking money here, green, folding money, real money, you know, so you can't have it really both ways. If, in fact, you're some geological institute and you're being, or a physics department, and you're being told, go out and study this, and you're being hired by the oil industry or this oil industry money coming your way, well, human behavior being what it is, and you want more, and you want your college president to be happy, and you want your governor to be happy because the governor wants, obviously, the state university to be cooperating with industry and all the rest of it, then I think you can see where I'm heading. At least, you know, there may be some kind of subtle and some kind of not so subtle way in which these results are almost predicted.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A new report assesses the visitation policies of acute care hospitals across New York. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The New York Public Interest Research Group and New Yorkers for Patient and Family Empowerment scored the flexibility and quantity of visiting hours and graded website information regarding visitation at hospitals across New York. The report also looks at whether the websites post details on patients' right to choose visitors. New Yorkers for Patient and Family Empowerment Director Suzanne Matei found a wide variation in visitation policies between the 99 hospitals they surveyed.
We looked at acute care hospitals in the state with 200 or more beds. Some of the hospitals did really very well. St. Peter's Hospital in Albany was the top dog. They scored at the top level in all three categories that we looked at. They scored a 10 in their visiting hours because they have this open visiting policy. They scored an 8 for their website clarity. And they also had a statement that was in compliance with the new federal policy that states patients choose who can be with them.
New York Public Interest Research Group Legislative Counsel Russ Haven says visitation is now viewed as a support network for patients.
One of the things that the literature supports is that the liberal visitation policies result in better outcomes, fewer medical errors, lower costs, and there's obviously an emotional component to this as well.
St. Peter's Hospital in Albany ranked highest overall, but other hospitals scored well for the information on their website, including Ellis Hospital in Schenectady and the CVPH Medical Center in Plattsburgh. CVPH ranked well overall, and spokesman Mike Hildebrand says they try to be as transparent as possible.
We're looking at trying to become more flexible and at the same time both maintain privacy and, you know, for all of our patients, and trying to do things like reduce noise and things of that nature, because when you have too many people visiting, it does create certain issues.
Albany Medical Center received mid-range scores for visiting flexibility and website information. Spokesman Sue Ford said the medical center had issued a statement in response.
Albany Medical Center always puts the medical needs and well-being of its patients first and foremost. And we know how important it is to patients to have their loved ones close at hand if they're in the hospital. So we make every effort to accommodate individual patients' desires to have the family or friends of their choosing at their side any time of day or night.
The report found that only 11 hospital websites posted information regarding the patient right to choose visitors regulation. CVPH's Mike Hildebrand notes that in practice, they are complying.
We are making that available to people when they are admitted. This is the right that patients have. They can be selective in who they want, or even go so far as to say, hey, I don't want anyone visiting.
A link to the report is available through our website, WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
A New York State Comptroller's Office report has found that the Metropolitan Transportation Authority gave Apple an unfair advantage to place a retail store in New York City's Grand Central Terminal. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The store opened in Grand Central in December and is one of the world's largest Apple stores. The comptroller's report says the MTA started talking to Apple about the space more than 2 years before opening it up for bidding. It says the competitive process followed by the MTA was at a minimum severely slanted toward Apple. Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office points out that a prior audit revealed problems with how the MTA managed and leased out its vast real estate portfolio. Eric Sumberg is DiNapoli's press secretary.
This was a follow-up audit to a previous audit that we had done that looked at the MTA's practices in terms of how it manages its real estate holdings. And specifically, it looked at the lease that the MTA had entered with Apple to fill a space in the Grand Central Terminal East balcony. We found that during this process, the MTA had slanted the process in favor of Apple and given it an unfair advantage over other potential vendors. While Apple may, in fact, turn out to be a good tenant, the company was directly involved in setting the terms of the lease and given exclusive access to information more than a year before any vendor knew the space was available.
MTA spokesman Adam Lisberg reacts.
The MTA takes very seriously its responsibility to manage its real estate portfolio well. And the proof is in the pudding. We have more than tripled our retail lease revenue from Grand Central in the last 20 years. We're putting out RFPs to lease out strange little spaces in subway stations that have nothing there now where we think stores could be in. We're at the moment searching for a new operator who can handle the entire retail function in a new subway complex we're building in Lower Manhattan called Fulton Center. For the first time, we're going to have essentially a shopping mall manager who will be in charge of finding the highest producing stores and the best possible restaurants to make that station complex not just a station with some stores in it, but a real retail destination. We do this all because every dollar we get in rents from stores that operate in our facilities is a dollar that we don't have to get from taxpayers or from our customers through fares and tolls.
DiNapoli is recommending a statutory change to increase oversight of public authority contracts exceeding $1 million. Current law dictates that only contracts over $1 million that are non-competitive or funded with state dollars can be reviewed by the state comptroller's office. DiNapoli's proposed change would make all contracts over $1 million eligible for review. Again, Eric Sumberg.
Essentially what happened is that Apple's negotiations with Metrazer, the previous tenant, became the requirements for any other vendor to come in and secure the space. And we felt that the MTA had set a dangerous precedent when it did this because it failed in its responsibility to have a public, open, and competitive and transparent process. Apple may prove to be a very beneficial and valuable tenant for Grand Central and the MTA, but we felt that the ends did not justify the means.
MTA's Adam Lisberg says the comptroller's report is flawed. He insists the lease process was open and transparent, and that DiNapoli is calling for something the MTA already does.
I cannot overstate how much we fundamentally disagree with what Comptroller DiNapoli's staff concluded in this case. Our process was open and transparent. We bought ads in the Wall Street Journal asking any company in the world, please come in, make us an offer for what you would do with the space. It had significant challenges. You had to make a large upfront payment to buy out the restaurant that was there. But we didn't think Apple was the only company in the world willing to do that. We had hoped that there would be more. They ended up being the only company to submit a proposal. But we believe that what we got from them was a very good deal for the MTA.
Because the MTA lease to Apple was purportedly a competitive process, it was not eligible for the comptroller's review before it was finalized. Apple didn't respond to requests for comment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A bill to strengthen the nation's cybersecurity law stalled in Congress this week, but the issue remains a top priority for policymakers and business leaders around the globe. The Innovation Trail's Marie Cusick reports now on a new program at the University at Albany that connects students in New York and Russia to teach them about cybersecurity.
Back in the late 90s, Fabio Affont was one of the first officers in New York to join the newly formed State Police Computer Crime Unit. These days, the retired lieutenant is sharing what he's learned about cybercrime with graduate students at the University at Albany.
Today, the rest of the day is going to be the test. As I mentioned before, it's 40 questions, multiple choice.
Affont's teaching a course called Introduction to Digital Forensics, and his class of Russian and American students is the first group to go through the school's new graduate certificate program in information security, also known as cybersecurity. Affont has testified in dozens of state and federal court cases over the years.
It's very difficult to cover your digital fingerprint.
That's why as more of our lives move online, the field of cybersecurity is becoming increasingly important, not only to the police, but also to governments and businesses. Even among experts, no one knows for sure how much cybercrime has already cost the public and private sectors. It's one of the reasons Daniel Smith signed up for the courses. He graduated from UAlbany with an MBA in the spring and hopes that spending the summer getting this graduate certificate will help him land a job.
I think it's a really important field right now. It's growing fast and there's a high demand and not that many people trained in it, so I think it would be a good opportunity for me.
Smith admits he also signed up so he could visit Russia. It's a country known to many Americans as the home of some of the most sophisticated hackers and cyber criminals on the planet. But Smith was there to study with a group of other American and Russian graduate students at the Bauman Moscow State Technical Institute. The school has a long-standing relationship with UAlbany that predates the Cold War.
Been to the Kremlin and the Red Square. Probably my favorite part of the trip was actually St. Petersburg.
The students returned to New York in July for the remainder of the classes. UAlbany professor Sanjay Goyal is a cybersecurity expert, and he designed the cross-cultural curriculum.
Part of the reason why we want to do that is to improve the understanding of issues between the two countries better, because security is a very sensitive area. Crime gets committed in one area and the victims are in a different area.
Cybercrimes can be tough to track and prosecute because they happen in a virtual world with no regard for long-established geopolitical boundaries and international laws. Goyal consults with governments about how to handle cyber threats, but he also says regular people need to be careful too, as we share more and more of our personal information online through commerce, communication, and social media.
You need to be very cognizant of the fact that crimes can happen and they can happen to anyone.
Goyal is also helping to launch an even more ambitious program in the near future. In 2014, UAlbany will become the first SUNY school to offer a complete undergraduate degree in the field of digital forensics.
The need for security is growing so fast, and every organization needs people who can do security.
Goyal says that after this first group of students finishes, he plans to recruit state government workers to sign up for courses to hone their cybersecurity skills. In Albany, I'm Marie Cusick.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1232. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.